Stay tuned for The Turning Point with Mike Fader. Okay, Mike Fader here. This is part 962 on what it means to be a man. And women are free to stay tuned if they want. whether or not you're sick of this or not. Well, maybe you'll figure something out by listening to this. Or maybe you won't, but at least maybe it'll be entertaining. First of all, thanks for the response to last week's program about Yogi Berra, the Yankees, being a kid in the 50s and 60s collecting baseball cards, and what it all meant, and the deeper parts of it, one hopes. If you want to get in touch with me about, and sports heroes for boys, if you want to get in touch with me about any of these programs, please go to my website, FaderFiles, FederFiles.com, FaderFiles.com, and there should be a place there, supposed to be a place there, to contact me, and I'd be very glad to hear from anybody who has anything to say. Doesn't matter, agree, disagree, comments, corrections, that's fine with me. Communication is what's the most important thing. So really one of the discussions, or one of the comments I made, was about sports heroes for boys and the importance for that, and sometimes how it gets, how people get carried away with it, how it could have its own faults. Everything has its own faults and its benefits. But these were men who were idolized by millions and now tens of millions of boys, sports guys. And I was I've been watching a lot of baseball recently, watching the playoffs, the Mets and the Yankees, but basically the Mets. In my old age, I used to be long ago a Yankees fan, but that stopped. Now I'm really, I can't say I'm a Mets fan, but I like watching the Mets with all their flaws. They seem more human to me somehow, but that's, of course, absurd. But they seem that way. But I noticed that these days, baseball players look a lot better than they did. A lot better, I mean, they look, forget about the steroids, but they look healthier. They look, and they're definitely bigger and stronger. Baseball players, a lot of baseball players you see these days are in much better condition, much better shape. And they all look like they could be football players or hockey players, some of them. Some of the baseball players I used to watch when I was a kid, and the ones who were I was a fan of, were, you know, they were strong and they were athletic, of course. But they... Sometimes they would be a little bit, they let themselves go a bit, you know, and I'm not just talking about the pitchers who tend to be, can be overweight and out of shape generally. But these days, long and short of it, is that a lot of the sports guys that I'm looking at, especially in baseball, I noticed sometimes they have a similar look to military men. They have that, you know, a lot of them, except for the beards, of course, they have that clean cut kind of tough, hard, almost completely masculine look, and they have that trim, sort of ready for action look, and a lot of the athletes seem to be like military men. And once again, that sort of reminds me or stirs up in me the idea of what it means to be a man. And when it comes to the military, you know, playing professional sports, except for women's professional sports, playing professional sports, most of these masculine, you know, these leagues and everything, it's obviously this is a very manly profession. These are very manly professions. Tough guys, you know, they get hit by baseballs or in other sports they get knocked down, they get hurt. And, you know, they're supposed to just shake it off. They walk it off. They, although they put more people on a disabled list now. I don't think they had a disabled list when I was a kid. They just said, you know, so-and-so, like, he strained his whatever, his muscle, his leg muscle, and he'll be back sometime. But now everybody's officially on a disabled list, and they worry about, you know, concussions and everything else. And in the midst of all this thinking about this, I saw an article in the paper about 4 or 5 days ago, and it was from West Point about the Army. And I'm going to read you some of it, try to read not to read too much of it. At West Point, for more than a century, boxing for male freshmen here at West Point has been a rite of passage and an academic requirement, one they share with male cadets at the Air Force Academy and midshipmen of both sexes at the Naval Academy. Officials say there is no better way to teach the grit needed for combat. We want to expose them to fear and stress and teach them a confidence to respond, Lieutenant Colonel Nicholas Gist, the director of physical education at West Point, said as he watched the cadets fight. We'd rather teach that at the academy than in Iraq or Afghanistan. How about not teaching it any place like that? How about not having to worry about teaching it there? Do we really have to go there and be there? No. In fact, I wrote an article recently, which I posted on Fader Files, about why are we still in Afghanistan. To continue. But data obtained by the New York Times shows that the lesson comes at considerable cost, this lesson of being, you know, learning about fear, stress, and teach them confidence. Boxing accounts for nearly 1 out of every 5 concussions at West Point and 1 out of every 4 at the Air Force Academy. So far this year, boxing has caused 1/4 of all concussions at the Naval Academy, more than twice as many as football. And we've all read about, you know, this thing, the whole thing about football and concussions and destroying people's lives not too much later in their lives, in their 40s and 50s, where people can't think or they die early from brain injuries. And you always read about, there's always articles, maybe once every 3-4 weeks, about somebody who's some high school quarterback. There was one who died. High school quarterback died about a week ago in New Jersey someplace, and there was a football player also who keeled over from the stress put on his heart. You read about that all the time. So far this school year, boxing has caused a quarter of all concussions at the Naval Academy, more than twice as many as football. The injuries sideline cadets at West Point from varsity sports, academics, and military training, West Point officials said. Cadets to concuss to complete the boxing class are required to repeat it. Sure, get your head beat in and you can't think straight. Just rest a little bit and go do it again. Now some parents and policymakers are asking whether the military needs to find better ways to instill perseverance than having its best and brightest repeatedly punched in the head. Here's a quote. There is an argument that whatever benefit a cadet gains from boxing, the cost of missing studies, of missing training, of becoming more vulnerable to injuries downrange are detrimental to military readiness, said Brenda Sue Fulton, a West Point graduate who is the chairwoman of West Point's Civilian Advisory Committee, known as the Board of Visitors. It's possible by trying to prepare our cadets, we are making them less ready. In the last three academic years, West Point has documented 97 concussions from boxing, more than any other sport, although more cadets box because it is mandatory. Air Force has a lot, and so does the Naval Academy. Boxing is not required for training. Is not required training for students at ROTC, at other colleges, or for those who enlist as infantry troops and will be the most likely to face hand-to-hand combat. Is there really much of that anymore, or any of that? Some medical experts say the risk of the boxing requirement may outweigh the rewards. No brain trauma is good brain trauma. Even if there are not diagnosable concussions, there can still be lasting damage, said Dr. Robert Cantu of Boston University, a leading neurologist specializing in concussions, who has advised the Army and Major League sports. Maybe you could justify it if there was some crucial life-saving skill that can't be taught in any other way. But short of that, it's absolutely stupid. Well, but that never stopped some large bureaucratic and indeed military institution from continuing to do something that they've done forever. The sport has a hallowed history at the academies. Together, they have won 18 collegiate championships in the past 20 years. That's West Point, the Air Force Academy, and the Naval Academy at Annapolis. And many of today's top military leaders look back fondly on the pummeling they received as plebes, the West Point nickname for freshmen. Boxing was made a requirement at West Point in 1905 at the behest of President Theodore Roosevelt. Who else? Joining horsemanship and swordsmanship as necessary skills for young officers. And though swords and horses were cut long ago, boxing remains. It has endured even as the military, after 10 years of battling roadside bombs in Iraq and Afghanistan, has become increasingly aware of the seriousness of traumatic brain injury, spending hundreds of millions of dollars on research and treatment. What about during World War II? What about all the tens of thousands of concussions that must have been suffered in World War II and brain damage? Who knows? They didn't treat it back then. They just sent in people for arrest, and that was that. Minor concussions become major disruptions to cadets' lives because West Point medical protocols require any cadet with a concussion to rest for at least 2 days, skipping all academic work, sports, and military training. For several days after, cadets are usually ordered to limit athletics and schoolwork, and sometimes putting them behind in classes. Professors are notified that such students are on cognitive profile. That's like one of those Defense Department things, like, you know, collateral damage. Cognitive profile, and should have a light workload. Lieutenant General Robert L. Caslin, Jr., the superintendent at West Point, said the protocol was a drastic change from when he played football at the academy in the 1970s. I've been knocked out, given the smelling salts, and shoved back in there. That was our concussion protocol back then, he said in an interview. I always thought it was a badge of honor when I got a concussion. You're one of the guys now. You get knocked out and you keep going. Now, he said, he has to weigh the costs and benefits of boxing. He said that West Point was working to mitigate injuries and studying the impact of concussions at the academy, but that he was unwilling to sacrifice teaching cadets how to overcome the fear of facing an opponent. And so that's why they use boxing, and they continue to use boxing until they decide to do something else or to stop doing that, because it instills confidence that you can come back and overcome your fear. And that, I mean, it's important, and this is what he says. We're the Army. The Army gets stuck in the most dangerous, most ugly situations. Ground combat is a brutal, unforgiving business, he said. Speaking in a room filled with mementos from the General Caslin said, speaking in a room filled with mementos from the Iraq War, including a chrome-plated AK-47 owned by Saddam Hussein. To me, it is a huge imperative to prepare our soldiers for battle, and I think it is what America expects of us. Let's see. In addition to boxing, West Point requires all cadets to take a hand-to-hand combat class that teaches takedowns and submission holds. General Caslin said the class was more effective than boxing in teaching cadets how to defeat an opponent, but less so in instilling courage. And there you have it. I mean, the manliness, you know, in sports, the manliness in the military. To talk about this kind of thing, it's strange to have somebody like me talk about this kind of thing. First of all, I have to say that I see myself as having, although I don't see myself very well sometimes, a total lack of qualifications about what it is to be manly. Often I feel like I'm pretending to be a man. Having been brought up entirely, almost entirely, I should say, by women, and domineering hysterical women who were basically afraid and angry at men. Now, sometimes, because when I was younger, I was bigger and stronger, and I had a really bad temper, I could tend to act in sort of a violent manner. I had a violent temper, actually. And where I would yell and get all red in the face, and occasionally got into shoving matches with people. And I have a kind of, or I used to have, until the last several years of my life, a kind of a hard rigidity, a certain, I wouldn't call it toughness at all. I mean, I've known a lot more men and women who are a lot tougher than me. In fact, most people seem that way, much tougher than I am. But I always had this kind of like hard, rigid attitude, which people may take or may have taken to be, you know, maybe that's a man, that seemed like a manly quality, although these things are changing all the time. And, you know, with feminism starting in the 70s and, this whole thing about Hillary Clinton now, is she too manly? Is she not? Is she still too womanly? All this, you know, can women take charge? And also in most places where I worked and places where I wound up a lot of times, I usually wound up being in charge because I seemed to know what the right thing to do was, and I seemed to have a way to get people to work for me to do things. So these are stereotypes, and I'm just reporting. I report, you decide. So I had a kind of a hard, rigid attitude about things, which is that manly? I don't know. I mean, we've all known plenty of women who have a hard, rigid attitude about life or about other things. But I was hard and rigid. I could often be loud, you know, yell at people. I could act in a violent manner, although I never got into a fight, and that's something else I can mention. Speaking of boxing, I got into some shoving matches with people, but never into an actual boxing match. I think I would have been too scared to do it. But I showed leadership qualities and all these other things. So people took me, sometimes people, other men would say, you know, you seem like a very sort of manly kind of fellow. You know, some people thought that about me. But is that really what a man is? Hard, rigid, loud, violent, tough? I mean, I'm just asking, are those qualities? And, you know, the other thing is that since I was raised by women and really hardly... It was my uncle lived next door, and my grandfather around the corner. But they were very mild men. But they were men, right? they worked hard, and here's another old maybe stereotype, but what counted as a man in those days was some man, was a guy who went to work, worked sometimes at a really hard or almost impossibly hard job, worked, and he protected his family, and that's what he did. He brought home money, he paid the bills, he was the man. He went out in the world, and he went nose to nose with people and did this arduous labor, and then came home, and he was a man. You know, he had the money, and the bills got paid, and he did what he needed to do. And that still persists. A lot of people, maybe in my generation, maybe not in newer generations, but that's the way it is. Certainly in my father's generation. I have a friend who is an expert on Hollywood movies, and he recently showed movies about World War II and what women were expected to be like while the men were off fighting each other. I don't think, well, there was plenty of nasty live fire ammunition, vicious training in World War II for infantry troops and for officers. The men were off fighting, and the women were expected to be good girls and behave themselves and stay at home. But then there was that blip in time, that presaging of what came later, when women, since the men all left the factories and got drafted or volunteered and left sort of essential jobs that were men's jobs, and most jobs were men's jobs where women stayed at home to take care of the kids. A lot of women went to work in these factories and did work that was otherwise done by men. And when the men got back from the war, the women, after having a taste of what it was like to go out in the world and work and to have that kind of feeling of that other feeling, aside from being a homemaker or raising kids, that feeling of success at a hard job out in the world where they were contributing to the war effort, they all just got basically sent home, and the men took over their jobs again, and the women stayed home. So it was a strange blip in American history. When it comes to boxing, my father was a tough guy. He was he was a big, strong, tough guy in a loud temper. But me, what I used to do is, I'd make a lot of fuss and a lot of noise, and sometimes I was bigger and louder than other people, so I got away with things. But when it came right down to it, especially when I was a kid, and I was a skinny little kid, I was always scared. And what I used to do is just run away. I never stood up and fought, either for some trivial reason, just to be manly, or for a real reason. Although, a couple of times in my life when there were actual physical emergencies that required me to use some strength and to overcome my fear, I was able to do it to protect other people. Not to defend myself, but to protect other people. But my father was a genuine tough guy. I mean, he may have been afraid underneath, but he didn't seem like it. He was big and strong and loud, and he was tough. And I saw my father personally knock two guys down in different situations. We once got thrown out of Yankee Stadium, speaking of sports and the playoffs and the military. My father managed to get himself and me thrown out of Yankee Stadium by knocking a guy down who had been constantly sort of throwing popcorn and beer in the air and splashing my father. My father warned him. He didn't stop. He was a boor and an idiot, and my father had some words with him, and bang, the guy went down, and we're lucky that my father didn't get arrested. But we were thrown out, shown the door. And my grandfather was an even more genuine tough guy. He had been a boxer. He had been in the Army. My father had not been in the Army. He was... He had two discs that were so bad that he couldn't pass the physical, which was a source of tremendous shame to him his whole life, that he couldn't fight in World War II. I mean, he tried to volunteer at least two times, and he couldn't do it. But my grandfather joined the Army when he came over here as a teenage immigrant from the depths of Poland and Russia, wherever he was, to escape, pogroms and everything. He joined. One thing he did almost immediately was, upon, getting to be the old enough, was to join the United States Army, and was there in the Army for 2 years, posted to the Philippines, and learned how to box somewhere along the way. I think he was genuinely a tough guy, and he was not taking any crap from anybody, this guy. By the time I met him, he was old and had Parkinson's disease, and it was difficult to imagine. But I saw his broken nose, and there were tales that my father told about my grandfather. But he was in his, I forget what it was, in his regiment, brigade, he was a middleweight boxing champion. And he had that typical broken nose that sometimes boxers get. You could see it. And my father told me that my grandfather had been a genuine tough guy. He had seen my grandfather once, who was threatened by gangsters. And my grandfather had a cleaning establishment, dry cleaning, in Toledo, Ohio. And a couple of the local mobsters came in, or shakedown guys came in, and told him that he had to pay every week to protect his store. And his response, according to my father, was to come around the counter and knock the two of them out cold and tell them that he was never going to pay. I don't know what happened after that, but and my father told me some of those stories. So my grandfather, a genuine tough guy. We were brought up, my generation, the baby boomers, were brought up with that kind of idea of what was tough and what was rough. War movies, you know, the idea of, like all my gym teachers, all through high school and junior high school, all the leaders of the Boy Scout troop I was in, they were all veterans, or almost all of them veterans of World War II, combat veterans, and a lot of the guys in my neighborhood. And they were tough. They were tough characters. And my father's whole generation, this Depression, World War II generation, and we were brought up on war movies, you know, John Wayne movies and cowboy movies and, all these bar fights that you see where people were, you know, hitting huge guys were smacking each other as hard as they could in the jaw, and nobody ever got a broken jaw. They said, whoa, you know, they would waggle their jaw a little bit, or they'd get up and say, shake their head, but that's okay. After getting smacked in the jaw as hard as they could by some other large guy and smashing into the floor or the bar or the wall, they'd get up and shake their heads and get back into the fight. Or if they got a chair, I guess it was special Hollywood chairs that they smashed over their heads that broke, you know, like those window panes that are made out of candy or whatever they were made out of. Where people got thrown through window panes. All those bar, remember those bar fights from the movies from the 40s and the 50s? That you see, nobody ever really got absolutely hurt from that. They had a couple of, you know, bruises and, you know, they shook their heads and got right back into it. So, but we were brought up that way. And once I had this experience, and there is a connection I wanted to mention. There's a connection. I mean, boxing is called the manly art of self-defense. And here's boxing, which is considered a sport. And then there's ultimate fighting, which God knows what that is, locking people in a cage. And they can do whatever they want to each other. You know, soon they'll be giving them knives, guns, whatever, you know, brass knuckles, clubs. But that's inevitable. But is that what's manly? You know, knocking a guy down. If you're brought up in my generation, I don't know if, unless, of course, you finally come to your senses, if you don't have a concussion, unless, of course, you really understand that is not what's manly. That's not what's manly, or not necessarily the only thing that might be manly. Or it's the only thing that it almost more is something like the boys do, that grown men do. And they call it what they call boxing, the manly art of self-defense, which is an old, old phrase for boxing. And sports and military are very much combined, especially these days. After 9/11, you hardly ever get to see a football game or a baseball game or even a hockey game where some soldier or Marine or sailor isn't being honored or out on the field, or a military band, or, you know, an honor guard, and the flags are rolled out. So the two things have become completely combined. And, of course, if you watch enough sports, sports uses all kinds of metaphors that the military use. You know, a blitz in football, a blitz. Blitzkrieg. They use a blitz in football. There's all kinds of sports metaphors. He crushed him, you know, and there's a million other sports metaphors. The only experience I ever had at boxing, and this was typical, the boxing, of course, I was a 9-year-old kid, skinny and scared, like I said, always skinny and scared was my way of being for a good part of my childhood life, way into my 20s. And I got into a fight with some kid. Some kid started yelling at me and then shoving me and then pushed me down. And I just sat there kind of whimpering, which was my response all the time, I recall to my shame. And because I was not taught by any man how to stand up for myself. And it wouldn't even have to be a man. Nobody taught me how to stand up. In my, the MO in my family where I grew up was cower, run, cry for help, and whine. Which I have perfected, I think, over the years. But so at this day camp, this kid in my, I don't know, whatever it is, in my class at my level, 9-year-old, knocked me down. And so what was the response? The response by the World War II guys who were the counselors for the boys was that we should put on the gloves. And so we put on the gloves, and I got knocked down 3 more times by the same kid. Who apparently knew how to hit people, or even if he didn't know, he didn't have any hesitation in doing it. I could never hit anybody. Just didn't seem like the right thing to do. I was afraid I would hurt somebody, and I didn't want to fight, right? I was just too scared. So I got banged down a couple of times. They stopped that. Then this is how they solved my ego problem, my bruised ego problem. They took me and put me with an 8-year-old, a kid smaller even than I was, and I was pretty small in those days. And we put these giant padded boxing gloves on, and they said, go ahead now, you can do it. And I managed to, you know, somehow get a wild punch in and hit this kid on the nose, and it bled a little bit, and he started crying. And then they held my arm up like they do in the ring, and I was supposed to be, that was supposed to increase my confidence. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. There is golden gloves boxing. There's boxing. There's fathers teaching kids, boys, how to defend themselves and how not to be afraid. I don't know from any of this. You know, I was not brought up that way. So I don't want to condemn all of this or be snide about it. And what do I know about the military? I was never in the military. But the one thing that they talk about in sports and then they talk about in war is something called a killer instinct. And a killer instinct is something that I never had. And I wished I did at times, but I don't have it. And they talk about that all the time. That's what it is to be manly, is to have a killer instinct.
Love is but a song we sing. Fears we will die. You can make the mountains ring or make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing and you may not know why. Come on, people now, smile on your brother. Everybody get together. Some may go, he will surely pay his. When the one that left us here returns for us at least, we are but a moment's sunlight fading in the gray. Come on.
together, try to love one another right now.
Yeah, killer instinct. Now, to overcome fear, yeah, that's something that people obviously would need to do in battle. This is a whole separate story about, you know, what America needs to, where America needs to be battling, where it needs to have its troops on the ground. And yet they keep sending them everywhere where nobody's asked them to go, and nobody generally wants them to go, but they get sent because it's not up to us anymore. These are imperial troops, you know, like imperial troopers from Star Wars. The modern army are imperial troops sent by the people who own and run this country to go wherever they are told to go. And there's no more declarations of war. So, but anyhow, yeah, if you're going to be in war, you know, I had a friend who was in Vietnam who was told that they train people to go towards the sound of danger, towards shots, towards the sound of danger. And they had to train people, you know, regular guys in World War II, even though they were brought up more as like tough guys than modern men were that went to Vietnam. The World War II guys were used to probably more standing up for themselves and fighting and being tough. But, you know, still, most of them were just regular boys and men, you know, who were farmers or machine workers or clerks or whatever. And they had to teach them how to face danger. And I'm sure most of them never really learned, but they had to learn to survive. In other words, one thing was you don't stand still rigidly with fear. A lot of people, when you're afraid, you just freeze up. Either you hide or you freeze up. Or some people fight when they get scared. You know, they get angry right if they get scared and they fight. But most people faced with, you know, deadly violence or the threat of death, premature death, and maybe even death itself, mortality, tend to want to hide. You know, they want to get out of the way. That's the natural response. I mean, fear is a natural human response. You have to, you need it for survival. You need it for survival. But then you could be too afraid. Like I say, I've spent most of my life being afraid. Afraid not just of, you know, violence or, you know, violent situations, which anybody might be afraid of, but just almost afraid of life itself. So I always have to overcome fear every day. I can understand why so many people take drugs or drink, because there's a kind of a fear that's instilled in some people more than others. And maybe it's along a continuum. We all have this fear. But some people have it worse than other people. And they start off the day and keep going all day long with a little, you know, chemical help or with a drink or more than a couple of drinks. And I've known people like that. Haven't we all known people like that or been people like that? In fact, sometimes I wish I could drink. My stomach would dissolve as bad as it is. I mean, but at least I wouldn't be shaking and be so afraid all the time as I have off and on in my life. But when there are people who are in certain professions, like cops and firefighters, they have to overcome fear. Now, some of these people, like cops, you know, they join up because they may be too aggressive or fear doesn't mean enough to them, right? But you've got to, if you're going to be in a position where you're going to be dealing with danger, with mortal danger and with potential death and violence, you're going to have to overcome your fear. And most of us in our lives have to, sometimes almost on a daily basis, overcome some kind of fear. Fear of loss, fear of responsibility, fear of losing love, fear of the world, fear of other people, fear of something inside which we can't even sometimes put a name to. I know two guys, two little tiny guys. One of them was a therapist of mine about 20 years ago. And he was a tiny little guy, a Jewish guy. And he told me once, we were talking, and he was talking about, I was talking about how afraid I was of everything and, you know, how I wasn't being responsible and I was too afraid that bad things were going to happen all the time. So I didn't do what I was supposed to do. I was just always hiding out and imitating my mother. And my therapist, who had been skinny little Jewish guy that he was in World War II, he had been a 19-year-old lieutenant, and he was a bombardier in a B-24 in a in a fight, you know, in an American bomber, and I think it was the 9th Air Force that went over Germany, and he had to face flak. People got killed around him, and he said it helped him overcome his fears of life and things. In daily life and difficulties, he wasn't as afraid after he survived the war. I'm sure there are people who are more afraid after they went to war, but a lot of people felt that they had become straightened out in some way or were less afraid of things. Life itself, even the daily grind and responsibilities and the mortality itself after they had faced that for years in World War II. And this guy said, too bad you weren't in the war. It would have made a man out of you. And some, you know, I actually sort of believed that. If I didn't go completely out of my mind or have to be, you know, sectioned out, was it called section? No, I don't know. Something mental excuse from the Army. But section 8? I don't know. But he said, too bad you weren't in the Army. It would have made a man out of you. Well, then, I would have learned responsibilities, and I would have overcome my fear. I knew another guy, also a little tiny, skinny little Jewish guy, who was, again, a lot of the officers on these planes were very young. He was also 19 and assigned to a B-17, and he was a navigator in a B-17, and also went on, he was on over 30 missions that flew over Europe and Germany and faced flak and the same thing. In fact, almost died because his plane was shot down and had to ditch in the English Channel in cold water. And one of the men who ditched with him died, froze to death, and he just barely managed to survive. And these two guys had a certain attitude about life, which was tough in a deep sort of way, But is that what men are supposed to be? Is that what men do? I mean, they're tough and they're hard and they become fearless? I don't think so. I mean, what is it? And here we're wandering into territory about that, you know, feminism and other people. But to be tough and to be rigid, is that manly? I mean, to be violent and tough and rigid. I don't know. Is that a manly thing? Look what's going on in Kunduz. And you've read these stories in Kunduz in Afghanistan right now. The Taliban, who have never gone away, and of course, if anybody had any sense, they would have seen that they never would go away, being their country and being rigid, lunatic bigots that they are, would never disappear. And now, after all this time, with the U.S. troops having reduced their presence in the country and their fighting presence, the Taliban has retaken Kunduz, and there's vicious fighting going on right now. This is a large city, or a relatively large city, for Afghanistan, in northern Afghanistan. And the first thing they did when they took over was... And these are paternalistic societies. I was talking about paternalism last week. These very paternalistic religions and paternalistic societies, right? Almost all modern religions are paternalistic, although Christianity sometimes can be interesting, and Buddhism definitely interesting that way. But, when it comes to Muslims and the Jews and most Christian, like look at the Catholic Church, right? So they took over, and the first thing they did, the Taliban, was, even though they said they weren't going to do it, was, of course, they found anybody, they looked for anybody who was, connected with the Americans or with the temporarily installed government that the Americans had put into place or any local councils. And, of course, being the manly, bearded men, Muslim men that they were, they went looking for women who had established schools for women and women's shelters. I mean, women and children are treated, especially girl children, are treated, the treatment is, there are hardly even words to describe it, by that culture, that primitive Muslim culture in Afghanistan are tortured, they are beaten, they are killed, they are kept almost like domestic animals. And they are... basically slaves to the men. There's also a tremendous prevalence of child abuse of boys in Afghanistan. Recently, what I was saying was, one of the first things that the Taliban did in Kunduz, there was a women's shelter that had been set up and maintained by a group called Women for Afghan Women. They raise money a lot in this country. Check it out. Go to their website, Women for Afghan Women, a very, very good organization. And they had helped go into the country. They had sent people in there and raised money and set up abused women's shelter. Plenty of abused women and women who were terrified for their lives in that really rigid, crazy, paternalistic culture in Afghanistan. And they set up shelters for these women where they could get away for the first time in their lives for, generations, millennia, I don't know, from the men who treated them the way they did. And, of course, the Taliban, being the manly men they were, when they came into Kunduz, they went and tried to track down every one of these women who had been in this shelter, and the women especially who had run the thing. No doubt they were going to, who knows what they were going to do to them. Getting off alive would have been a miracle for them. But thank Allah, or Allah, that they all managed to escape. They got advance notice, and they managed to escape. And in places like Saudi Arabia, another paternalistic, manly society, look at the way they treat other people. Look at the way they treat women. Is that manly? Is that manly? And some of the ultra-Orthodox Jews, the men in Jerusalem, when you see them throwing rocks and spitting at women, especially spitting at women. I don't know if they're throwing rocks. They were throwing rocks at Palestinians. But they were spitting at women and cursing women and putting them in fear of physical danger, and girls for walking someplace where they shouldn't walk, for dressing some way they shouldn't walk, according to these men. And, is that manly? These are paternalistic societies. And recently, maybe it was just a few days ago, and I also wrote another essay about this on my website, on Feder Files, FederFiles.com, which I'd be interested in your response to. The United States Air Force, manly men, military men, managed to bomb and destroy a Doctors Without Borders hospital. Doctors Without Borders. A lot of the men who are doctors, men and women, but a lot of the men who do that, who go into the places just to save lives. Maybe that's not as masculine as fighting, for your country or facing up to danger. I'm sure they didn't have boxing training, these men, but they went in to save lives. And 19 people, the American Air Force managed to bomb. They called it collateral damage, that same evil phrase, collateral damage. They killed 19 people and wounded 37 other people. They bombed the hospital, the United States Air Force. They bombed the hospital. They said because maybe the Taliban had been, using it as a shield or hiding in there. But they bombed this hospital, the only hospital within God knows how many, miles that could treat anybody for any really bad wounds. And they killed 3 children and 12 staff members of this. And if you ever see one of these guys, if you ever saw one of these guys interviewed, he would be, the pilots, maybe some of them are women these days, but most of the pilots are men still. And they would seem, this is the idea of masculinity. You'd see the clean cut, They have that tough sort of fearless look, maybe instilled by boxing classes, and they face danger. Now, this is not to, like I say, I am not necessarily qualified to make certain observations. This is just my opinion about what I'm observing. There are times when a country needs to protect itself against another country. There are times when men need to stand up and do the things that women aren't strong enough or necessarily inherently violent enough to do, fast enough, or basically, able to be in combat. Now, women are playing more and more roles in combat, or will play more and more roles in combat as leaders and as, ground troops or pilots or whatever in the American military. Is that a good thing? It doesn't matter if it's a good thing or not. They are going to do it, and there are some women who want to do it. But and there are women cops now everywhere. I mean, one sees women cops. When I was growing up, that was an unthinkable thing, a woman cop. And the truth is, to this day, although, you know, most of the cops rely on pepper spray and, you know, their batons and their, of course, their, you know, their sidearms, you know, their semi-automatic pistols. So that, you know, definitely are the old equalizers. Still, when there's an altercation or when there's trouble, you still have this old lingering feeling, at least I do, that you'd rather see a big guy, you know, with a uniform on. I mean, the authority comes from the police presence. They could put you in jail or they can shoot you, you know. But the fact that that women show up, you know, in a situation to try to calm down a domestic dispute or maybe there's some kind of other violence, it's I don't really know. But and the question of whether or not so you see these guys who bomb this place. That's not really very manly to murder children and to kill people who had come halfway across the world to help other people. I mean, you know, doctors, how manly is that? And I'm not going to get into the whole idea of how are men and women different, you know, whether it's cultural or genetic. That's a whole other discussion, also one I'm not really qualified for. But sometimes, you know, people need to defend themselves either individually or in a society. And who's to say but boxing isn't a good choice? The final, you know, end of this article is that about West Point. It says that some of the parents are concerned over boxing industries. You know, one woman who was reading about this in Facebook, who has a kid at West Point, she said her son, a top student and cross-country runner, was sidelined with headaches for 2 weeks after a concussion, she said, because he missed so much boxing class he had to retake it. All the research and prevention going on in the Department of Defense right now on this, and we are still forcing kids to give other kids head injuries, she said. Have we learned nothing from 10 years of war? Last fall, after getting two black eyes and a concussion from boxing, an Air Force cadet who is a varsity athlete told his mother not to worry because he was taking only body blows in class until he recovered. In a phone interview, his mother said he had sustained another concussion in a boxing bout a week later and then woke up vomiting in the middle of the night. He was forced to curtail schoolwork as symptoms lingered for more than a week. I was livid, beside myself. In a panic, his mother said, I knew he could be severely impacted, maybe for life. And for what? He is a math and science guy. He doesn't need to know how to box. 20 years ago, the Air Force announced plans to end mandatory boxing because of mounting pressures from the medical community, but boxing continues. After his second concussion, the Air Force cadet that this mother was talking about was forced to drop boxing class. He has to take it again next year. I tried to get him to leave the academy, said his mother, and he wouldn't. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Thank you. apt to be my pride and joy. Who dares to place a musket on his shoulder to shoot the mother's darling boy? Let nations arbitrate their future trouble. It's time to lay the sword and gun away.